The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson. You may know me from such sites as, well, I tried to do a Troy McClure thing there, and it really wasn't working. Already one lame Simpsons reference, we're not even a minute in. From RedLegNation.com, joining me today, and I'm not sure why he's joining me because we really don't have anything at all to talk about, is another guy that likes to write a little bit about baseball and the Reds, our friend Joel Luckup. Joel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been a fun, you know, day to read about all this stuff about Brian Price. So
who?
He sounds like a super cool, fun guy. Sorry, did I jump on your lead? Did I already go ahead and give away the big news that probably nobody's heard yet?
I'm sure no one has heard. Really, that's the only thing anyone's talking about in the Reds fan universe. Brian Price, manager, do you have a sort of a quick reaction? Is it the same as mine, which is I'm very pleased with this hire, and that's the first time I've been able to say that in a while.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when Dusty Baker was hired, I spent a lot of time kind of trying to make myself feel better about the deal. And with Brian Price, I've actually been trying to find reasons why I don't like it, and I haven't been very successful. So, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I'm the same way, you know. I've very famously, between some of the editors at Red Leg Nation, they give me a hard time about it sometimes, but wrote a piece defending Dusty Baker basically at the height of when the pitchforks were out. And a lot of that was trying to convince myself with Dusty. With Brian Price, a lot of reasons for optimism, I guess, as I wrote earlier today. And we can get into some of those. We already discussed the last time we were together, we discussed a lot of those too, so we won't touch on them too much. But let me just quickly, for those of you who don't know a whole lot about Brian Price, and you know, you've heard his name a lot, and you've learned a lot more about him today, or you've had the opportunity to if you've been paying attention. Probably the thing that I'm most impressed about with Brian Price, I mean, you know, he pitched it at Berkeley, Cal Berkeley. So he's a smart guy. But really, the thing that really impressed me more than anything else, he went to the same high school as Tupac Shakur.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did. I did. In fact, somebody on Twitter today suggested that maybe Tupac's hologram is going to be the Reds' new hitting coach.
Oh, excellent. At the very least, can throw out the first pitch or rap the national anthem or something. Yeah, so that's much more impressive than anything, any of the other things that we need to be concerned about.
And also Courtney Thorne Smith, is that who it was?
Courtney,
or one of those?
Yes, one of these 1990s, I don't know, one of those 90210 shows I think she was on. And
Yeah. I probably had a crush on her at one time or another.
I remember there was some lame sitcom she was on that embarrassingly teenage me watched because, yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on. We don't need to talk about my teenage years very much, if you don't mind. I know you keep trying to get into that, but we're not going to do that. Brian Price, why are you optimistic about him?
What I like about him is, and we talked about this in the last time, the quote from Bronson Arroyo where he talked about how Brian does not want to just go by his gut. He wants to have evidence backing up whatever decisions he's making. Just that line there. Like, I don't need somebody who is sabermetrically inclined. I don't need somebody who's going to have a win expectancy chart sitting in front of him when he's managing a game. But I do want somebody who is not going to just kind of stick to the way things have always been. And I felt like that was the thing that frustrated me most about Dusty, is that he lacked that creativity and that ability to do things differently and try to see things differently and try to learn from the way things had been. I felt like he made a lot of the same mistakes over and over because he just wasn't willing to learn, because he kind of was stuck in this mindset of this is how things always have been. And I get the impression that that's not how Brian Price works. So that's what makes me optimistic about him.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I would agree 100%. That's the single biggest reason why I'm optimistic. And that quote from Arroyo just about knocked me for a loop. And the things Price said in his press conference today as well, and some of the interviews, I heard his interview with Mo Egger as well this evening, and really gave you an idea that, like you said, I don't need a guy that's going to be, I don't need Joe Sheehan or some hardcore sabermetric guy in the dugout necessarily. But the fact that Brian Price, by all accounts, is at least going to have an open mind, that's almost more than I could imagine.
Right.
He touched on statistical analysis being part of the, part of the package that he's got to consider. But just the fact that he'll have an open mind to things gives me reason to hope that, on the whole, he's got a chance to be a very good manager. He's going to do dumb things. He's going to do things that we're going to get mad about and argue about. And, that's what's part of what's fun about baseball, frankly. But it'll be a real change, a sea change, to have a manager in Cincinnati willing to look outside the box a little bit. And really, that was one of the biggest criticisms, Dusty. He managed by the book and only by the book. And for all his good qualities as a manager, a lot of times that put some limitations on what I felt like he was able to accomplish in game. I guess we don't know what we're going to get, but the early returns seem to be very encouraging, I guess is the way I'd put it.
Yeah, the thing that I like about him is that he is, you get a lot of quotes from players who seem to at least view him to where he does things differently, to what, like the perspective, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. The things that they thought were wrong with Dusty, they seem to feel like Brian Price does those things right.
Right, without mentioning Dusty's name, that's what they're saying. That's what it sounds like, right?
Right, and they're not talking about like the things that irritate us, the things like bunting and that kind of stuff. They're talking about the kind of stuff that matters within the clubhouse. The accountability. You hear the word accountability has probably been used more today than any time since Benghazi.
Right.
So, things that matter in the clubhouse is what really strikes with me, is that, they want somebody who is there kind of leading them. And I kind of feel like just based on the things that they're saying, that they, you hear a lot of like Mike Leake talked on Lance McAllister's show about, guys kind of did their own thing. There wasn't any cohesive message going on out there. And they feel like at least they're going to get that from Brian Price. Now, obviously, like you said, it'll be interesting to find out whether or not that actually happens. But, it makes me feel good that the players are at least see him as somebody that's different from Dusty in the ways that they feel like they need things to be different.
Yeah, the quotes from the players have been really an eye-opener for me, and they're not the normal canned quotes you see. We got a lot of respect for the guy, whatever. The quotes have been fascinating, specifically Homer Bailey, for example. And not just recent quotes, but going back to, Mark Sheldon a month or two ago had a pretty good article about accountability. And, Homer's quotes and several other quotes I've seen are basically, Homer said, "One time I was slow getting over to first, cover first. And I came back in the dugout, and Price came up to me basically and said, 'That's unacceptable, period.' And Homer said, basically, yes, sir, it'll never happen again. And it didn't happen again. Now, you know, there's a lot of criticism of that sort of old school type of approach, maybe. I hate to use old school because what we're hoping with Price is that he's going to be what we always term as a new school manager. But despite that sort of leadership, really is what it is, Homer had nothing but praise for Brian Price. I mean, he and all the pitchers, really. I was really impressed with what they had to say about his ability to communicate and his ability to really lead. It, really interesting quotes, I thought. Did you get the same feeling of some of these quotes? They weren't just the canned quotes you usually see.
Right, and what's interesting to me about it is the way the pitchers talk, you almost kind of get this feeling like they felt like they were the only ones being led, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's this weird sense, like, you know, they talk about how, oh, he held us accountable. I mean, I've seen three or four different pitchers say that exact phrase, he held us accountable for everything. And the emphasis, and maybe this is just the quotes that are being picked out by the writers because that's the, you know, the angle that they've hung on to or whatever. But it's interesting to me that the pitchers are so, like, focused on this accountability as if to say, you know, that wasn't there on the other side. You know, it was only us pitchers being held accountable. We didn't feel like the rest of the team was being held accountable.
That's absolutely, excuse me, easy for me to say, the way that those quotes come across, you know. And the quotes specifically from Sam LaCure, some of the quotes he had after Dusty was fired made me think, you know, some of these pitchers may not even want to share him with the hitters. They feel like they've got something special that's really helped them to achieve more maybe collectively and individually than they would have without Brian Price. Maybe there are some quotes out there where somebody doesn't like him. Some of the pitchers don't like him. I haven't heard them, and I've heard nothing but encouraging things.
Yeah. Now, I will say the one thing that I've heard that concerns me, and this is more just because it's more of an attitude thing than anything. When he was on with Mo Egger and he talked about how he wanted to emphasize how important that one run is. And, you know, I don't want to blow this out of proportion, except that, you know, the more I look at things, the more, you know, it's not about bunting and all that. That's not the big concern. I feel like it's that drawback is that if you overemphasize that one run, you kind of lose focus of the fact that you're trying to score more than one run. And so, you know, I don't want to blow it out of proportion, but it was the language that he was using where he was really kind of emphasizing that he, you know, we're going to focus on, you know, making sure that you know, how important that one run is and getting that run and, you know, all that. And I hope that doesn't start to lead towards strategies that are only leading your team to get in one run.
Right. You play for one run, you're just going to get one run. If you're wanting to nitpick, that's absolutely the area where my red flag went up and said, whoa, wait a minute, what did you mean by that? I'd like to have had a follow-up question
right.
But there were other areas where I thought, wow, you know, and again, maybe I'm trying to read too much into it on the other side rather than hoping for the best on the one run quote. What about the quote where he said, I think the quote goes like this, I've never enjoyed the matchup game if you have the type of pitchers that can get left-handed and right-handed hitters out. I took that to mean maybe Sean Marshall's not going to be a lefty one-out guy that maybe he'll pitch to because he gets right-handed hitters out as well as left-handed. I took it that way. Did you take it that way?
Yeah, and I think even more than that, I think you might find that he won't be so quick to bounce around his bullpen guys as much. You know, he may let guys come in and say, look, you've got this whole inning rather than, okay, I just need you to get this guy out.
The opposite of the Tony La Russa approach, basically.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, it's as a fan, I think that I like that strategy better. You know, the pitchers may vary on what they feel about that, but I imagine that he probably has had conversations with guys before where they've told him, you know, it's kind of a lot more, it feels like more of a drain or more wear and tear, or, you know, I just don't like that having to, you know, just get ready to pitch to only one guy.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Absolutely. And so,
I mean, it should be interesting. I think that the thing that, you know, will feel most different is the fact that he will likely use the bullpen and the starting pitching in quite a different fashion than what we're used to seeing, because he's more familiar with those guys. And it's, you know, if he's making the call, he's probably going to be a little more sensitive to what their wants and needs are, I think.
And their strengths and weaknesses. He'll have a better command of that. Before we leave Brian Price, I don't know if you may not want to make a prediction on it, and really, Price was non-committal today at his press conference and the interviews that I heard. But obviously, he was a fairly big proponent of Aroldis Chapman in the rotation last year. Frankly, I'm afraid that ship's probably sailed. I don't know that we'll ever see that happen. But do you willing to make a prediction, or do you get any sense where obviously he was a fan of it at one point? Are we going to see that again in the spring?
Well, you know, he told Lance McAllister that he reiterates way for Chapman to develop as a pitcher is to get more innings. You know, that's as close as I've heard him to hint that they may be pushing him back into the rotation. But, you know, the hard part is convincing Chapman that that's the best role for him. You know, I think it's, you know, Dusty got a lot of grief, but it maybe Dusty was, you know, a little birdie on Chapman's shoulder, you know, kind of pushing him in this direction. But I mean, I think ultimately the reason they decided not to to keep pursuing the starting rotation was not Dusty, but it was Chapman.
I think that tipped it in the favor of closing, no doubt.
Right. So, you know, if Brian Price can talk to Chapman and say, you know, look, this is where you want to be, because this is where you're going to best utilize your skills, or this is where you're – I mean, hell – this is where you're going to make the most money.
Get that big contract, exactly.
You know, so it's something worth considering.
Well, if Chapman has a relationship with Price like some of these other pitchers have, and we don't know, there's the language issue, and I don't know what, who knows. I get the sense that if he has as good a relationship, that, you know, Price being the manager can maybe be that birdie on his ear this year and explain to him what the situation is. Whereas last year, although Price appeared to be in favor of putting him in the rotation, Price still was you know, not number one on the totem pole there. It was Dusty's ultimate decision, really, in a lot of ways. And Price, you know, Dusty was the boss, had to sort of be a team player. So who knows? We don't know. This is all speculation. But if nothing else, even if he's still in the bullpen, Price's quotes today about, you know, more innings makes you think maybe there'll be more, that he will be more creative in terms of using Aroldis more, even if he's in the bullpen. Two innings occasionally, things like that. So that could... And again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, and this is a day where I think a lot of Reds fans are wanting to be hopeful of what we're going to get. I'm very hopeful at this point, and I'm actually, I wouldn't have said this 2 weeks ago, but at this point I'm really excited for 2014 to begin. Can you believe that?
Well, and you know, something that's interesting that kind of goes along with, you know, what we saw today was Walt Jocketty saying, you know, we still have a lot of work to do. You know, I mean, there's this big elephant in the room that's kind of going to barrel through the off season if something doesn't get done with it, and that's Brandon Phillips. And so, whether or not Brian Price's manager is going to have any effect on if Brandon Phillips stays around is hard to say. But it's clear that there's someone within the Reds organization that is telling people that Brandon Phillips is going to be shopped around. It's, you know, John Fay's written about it. Bob Nightingale has written about it. Other guys. I mean, it's kind of spread from there. But I mean, this wasn't just, you know, an unsourced thing. I mean, I heard it from multiple people at the park before the season ended that Phillips was likely to get shopped around. So this isn't like a you know, one of those things that you know, it's come from multiple places. Now, I have not heard it directly from anybody in the front office, but you know, the people that I've heard it from are unrelated. So, you know, I think it's realistic that it's, you know, a conversation that has happened. And so the question is, do you think that trading Brandon Phillips, one, is possible to help the Reds by doing that, and two, is something that they probably have to do at this point?
I think yes on both counts for various reasons. I think, number one, whether it's going to help the Reds in 2014, there's so many variables there in terms of what they get back, whether they can use money that's freed up, if they're able to free up any money to address some of the weaknesses of the team, and, of course, who's gonna fill in at second base. So there's really too many variables at this time, but I think there's absolutely a chance that it could help the team. Number two, with Phillips, I guess really I used to be a big fan of Brandon Phillips. let me just say that. I wasn't at first. He absolutely won me over, and you know, the ever-present smile. And probably, gosh, 5 years ago, I had someone in the Reds front office. I've mentioned this several times on the – I beat it to death. But it really illuminated to me what the front office that time – this was early in Castellini's tenure. John Allen was still around. But the feeling was that they were in love with Brandon Phillips in the Reds front office at that time. They were very happy with him being the face of the franchise. He got his contract. He called Bob Castellini a liar, which seems like a horrendous idea to call the guy signing your checks a liar after he pays you out $72.5 million. And then, of course, we had the other stuff with, the C. Trent Rosecrans, just that profane episode. We had, some other things, but including a somewhat profane direct message he sent to Red League Nation's Twitter account. I feel like his time has come to move on. I feel like at this point that's what he wants. And there's somebody, I don't know who it is. If I had to guess, and this is pure speculation, I'd say it comes from the highest levels, Bob Castellini. I can't imagine that the Castellinis were happy with the after signing him to that big contract. They're really happy with being called a liar, basically, that Bob was called a liar. And so I think there's going to be a market for him, too. I think everyone's underestimating the market for him. Brandon Phillips is not a bad player. He's got this contract that really is not even a terrible contract for what I think he can provide. He was down this year, but I don't think I think the next couple of years he'll be better than he was this year. He should be. I think this is sort of a little bit of an anomaly. He won't be as good as he was, but I think there's going to be a market for him. It's just a question of what they can get in return.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a 2.5 win player or something like that, which is, it's above average. He's one of those players that you might want to segment out what he does well and kind of focus on that. So if you're a team that really could use some help defensively, he may be the guy you want, even though maybe his bat isn't exactly, despite the 100 RBIs, his bat isn't really ideal. What's interesting?
RBIs.
What's interesting to me is that, say he ends up, and I don't have any reason to believe that he actually will, but say he ends up in New York. I wonder if Reds fans are going to be surprised when he's batting sixth or seventh or eighth in New York. Instead of batting fourth or third or second, with the Reds, because I've had a lot of people. It's fallen off a little bit lately, but a lot of people say to me that you can't trade him because he's so versatile in the batting order. Which my response to that that it really doesn't matter that much. I think he's always – I've always felt like he's been miscast offensively. And maybe I underestimate that, but I've always felt like he'd be better as a fifth or a sixth hole hitter because he's the – you want a high contact guy in that position because he's going to be – your fifth or your sixth hole hitter for me is really what your cleanup is. He's the guy that's going to make sure the bases get cleared as much as they can before, you get to your really lousy hitters at the end of your lineup. In my mind. So I've always felt like that Brandon Phillips is his ideal role. Now there's a lot of ego, more ego tied up into batting order than there is into actual you know, sensical things that matter. So I can understand why, you know, he was never going to bat fifth or sixth, but I always felt like he would have been better off on that role. So anyway, my point of all of this, so, you know, say you have a team like, and I'm only using Atlanta because really they're the only team that's been rumored to even be interested, but say you have a team like Atlanta that's got Dan Uggla, who's, you know, lousy defensively. Well, they might be particularly interested in Brandon Phillips simply because they may feel like, well, we really need to fill that hole up the middle. And if you had Brandon Phillips next to Andrelton Simmons, I mean, you're hardly ever going to have balls getting through the middle. I mean, it's ridiculous to think about. So, you know, they may be a little more motivated to get somebody like Phillips than, say, a team that, you know, maybe already has a decent defensive second baseman, but who doesn't have much of a bat. I don't have anybody off the top of my head right now, but you know, if you got somebody who's decent defensively, not much of a bat, well, Phillips isn't going to be much of an upgrade for those guys. But Phillips may be a different kind of an upgrade for somebody like Atlanta or somebody along those lines.
Sure, especially given the fact that he's probably going to be an average hitter. One thing I fault myself personally with respect to BP is to try not to do sort of the same thing a lot of people did with Adam Dunn. Adam Dunn, certain different players, and Adam Dunn's my favorite Red of recent vintage, and so I'm a little bit biased, but one of the things that always irritated me about Dunn was that everyone wanted to really hammer him for his flaws, the things he couldn't do, while ignoring the things he did do well. And I've tried to fight myself on Brandon Phillips. There are things that he still can provide to a team. He's not a bad player. And a lot of times, everyone, especially on the internet, wants to, it's all one way or all the other. And so there are things, that's why I think there's going to be a market for him. It, you know, if he's a 2.5 win player, first of all, and he, you know, defensively is still above average, and he's not going to kill you at the bat, he's just been miscast.
Well, and I think some of it with Phillips, too, is his perceived value has always been a little higher than what I think his actual value
is. Well, a lot higher in some circles, I would say.
Right.
And that's a function of the RBIs, largely. 100 RBI, that's the thing I've heard more than anything when BP gets suggested. There's a suggestion for a trade. How are the Reds going to replace all those RBIs, you know? And obviously that's well, we can talk about RBI some other time, but that's not Brandon Phillips. That's not the value you can provide. Now, he can, I guess, as you said, if you hit him a little lower in the lineup, BP's a pretty valuable player. I always wish the Reds would have hit him sixth. I thought if you hit him sixth with the defense he provides and what he can do as a six-hole hitter, this is a guy that I want on my team. As a leadoff hitter, no. As a cleanup hitter, no. That's not his skill set. But you're right. I think and Atlanta makes a lot of sense for a number of reasons, not only that Phillips is from that area, but the idea of Dan Uggla in the Reds lineup next year scares the bejesus out of me. That's the one rumor we've heard so far. Does that scare you as much as it scares me?
It doesn't scare me terribly. I don't know where he fits in the order. I'm afraid that he'll bat fourth. He might be better off batting seventh. I don't know. He walks a lot. Not that, you know, that makes up for some of his other shortcomings, but he does walk a lot. He's always walked a lot. A couple years ago, he tied Votto for the league lead in walks. I don't know enough about, like, I haven't watched him play enough to know if this is an issue or not, but like his BABIP this year was only 225. Is he somebody that's going to rebound from something like that? He doesn't, you know, to be valuable, he doesn't need to hit 270. He's got some power. He doesn't have as much, you know, his pop has kind of dropped off. He's still got more power than Brandon Phillips has. But you know, his pop has dropped off considerably. If he can bat 230, he's gonna get on base in like a 360 clip then. And you know, if that's the case, I don't know where you put him in, and he's so bad defensively.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
brutal,
could he take over? Could he play some in left field? I don't know. Could he play some at third base? I'm guessing not. I'm guessing he doesn't have much of an arm if he's a second baseman. So I, I don't want Dan Uggla. I can understand, you know, what value he may have in a trade, because basically you're making the deal a little more interesting to the Braves because you're going to take some money off their hands. You know, but then it frees up long-term money for signing somebody like Chu that they wouldn't be able to do if they had Phillips still on the roster. So, you know, I guess I'll say that I reserve judgment on trading for Uggla because I'm assuming that the Reds will probably also get a prospect that goes along with that. Right. And if that's the then it depends on who the prospect is.
Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at his stats now, and I might be able to talk myself into it now that I'm going to look at it. Everyone knows the 179 batting average, and that's the reason why everyone's so scared of him. But let me just say this. Brandon Phillips' on-base percentage this year was .310. Dan Uggla's on-base percentage this year, the lowest he's had in years, was .309. Mm-hmm. You know, and the year before that it was .348. He had a rough one 2011, but before that, .369, .354, .360. I don't want Dan Uggla either. I'm with you, but I could probably, depending on what else comes back in that trade, and if obviously Ugla's making, I think, $13 million this coming year, but if it frees up more long-term money, they can get creative in other areas, Chu or other. You know, I could probably talk myself into that, which surprises me, actually, now that I look at it. That's 225 BABIP, which is by far the lowest he's had in his whole career, I guess. Wow. I'm going to start trying to get myself accustomed to that thought because Brandon Phillips makes all kinds of sense for Atlanta. Why don't they just trade Brandon Phillips for Andrelton Simmons? That seems like a – well, that guy can pick it, can't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
but Chad, we don't need a shortstop.
Oh well, that's true. Actually, I could if Zach Cozart's not batting second, I'm not going to complain much about Zach Cozart. Frankly, right. he's not Andrelton Simmons defensively, but
he's solid.
Yeah, he's solid. I don't have issues with Cozart if he's batting seventh or eighth. So I guess really what we're talking about here is something you had mentioned. Trading Brandon Phillips doesn't necessarily mean that the Reds are not taking 2014 seriously, I guess. And that's something that a lot of people have complained about. Well, if we don't have Brandon Phillips, you know, who is going to replace him? And I thought we're going to go all in again in 2014. And that's not necessarily the case, but it depends who they get back. But there really aren't very many internal options, I don't guess, for second base. Are there? Unless I'm missing somebody.
No. I mean, it's, you know, your best option right now is Henry Rodriguez. And, you know, I'm not completely convinced that Henry Rodriguez is more than, you know, a utility bench player. But there, you know, and really the scary thing is that there's not a whole lot in the pipeline. I asked Doug Gray today.
We can call him Doug Dirt. That's fine. He doesn't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I asked our friend Doug Gray today about what bats, you know, were the bats that were in the system. And really, it's just Yorman and Jesse Winker and Philip Irvin. And that's really kind of it for now. And they're all outfielders. So, you know, the infield prospects are not all that appetizing, I don't think. So.
Well, which is why I was kind of hoping the Reds would make a splash with this Cuban defector, Alex Guerrero, who the Dodgers ended up signing for 4 years and $28 million. I thought if they could do that, you know, I don't know how good he's going to be, but all reports, he'd at least be serviceable, and he'd be an internal option that would give the Reds some more flexibility to deal Phillips.
That's why I've come up with the harebrained idea that the Reds are going to trade Homer Bailey plus some to get Jerks and Profar plus some.
Oh, gosh. Hold on. I'm getting lightheaded here. Oh, what I would give to have Profar. What I would give to have Profar. That guy can play.
And he's, what, 20? I mean, it's highly unlikely. But I think Homer Bailey makes sense. I'm not like advocating trading Homer in the sense that I feel like he needs to be gone. By no means do I feel that way. I'll be perfectly happy if Homer Bailey is on the Reds roster on opening day in 2014. That being said,
he's the most likely, isn't he?
If he is not interested in signing a long-term deal, and I don't mean like a 5-year deal, I mean like maybe a 3-year deal or something where the Reds can get a couple years of free agency out of him. And I get no impression that he is interested in signing a deal. And I may be wrong, and the Reds may end up announcing tomorrow that they've signed him to a multi-year deal. But if he's not interested in that, then you have to shop him, because he's got value, and you're going to lose him to free agency. And while it'll be nice to get a draft pick for him, I mean, you're happy to get draft picks for guys like Bronson Arroyo, for guys like Homer Bailey, who have legitimate trade value. You really need to look at your options and try to make a good trade for somebody like that. So you got to shop him around, and you've got to, you know, go and ask for guys like Profar. Now, Profar is probably maybe a little too high of prospect, which is why I say Homer plus guys, you know, and Profar plus guys in return. It won't be just a one-for-one deal if something like that were to happen. It'll be a much more complicated deal than that. But, you know, I think about, like, you know, Zach Greinke netted Gene Segura for the Brewers. And who was the other one? There was somebody else that got it. They got a decent prospect that maybe wasn't a huge name, but was somebody that was going to be available to play soon. You got to look at those kinds of things because, you know, especially if, you know, and that's the thing about the Brandon Phillips trade is the Brandon Phillips trade is probably not going to look great on the surface by itself. It's going to require a few other moves. It's going to be all part of a plan that for things to work. They're talking about really reshaping the clubhouse. That's not going to be just one move. It's going to be two or three moves at least. And in order to do that, you know, you're going to end up losing a couple guys that are key players now, but you're hopefully going to, you know, hopefully they'll be able to work the deals in a fashion that will bring back guys that will be long-term, you know, useful players for the organization.
Right. Keep that window open for a little bit longer than just the 2014 season. Homer is, you know, I've been very clear on this podcast and elsewhere. Big fan of Homer Bailey, always have been, but you've got to recognize a couple of key elements here. Number one, his value has probably never been higher. At least, you know, it might have been higher right as he was drafted, but of course he wasn't eligible to be traded at that point. And so certainly for the last several years, Homer Bailey's value is as high as it's been, maybe as high as it's going to get. I don't know. Number two, he's right on the cusp of being a free agent, and I'm like you. I don't see the signs, and we don't hear the internal conversations. But you know, he's not made the rumblings that you've heard from some other people about it. Boy, I'd love to be in Cincinnati for the rest of my career. Not that he's been, disparaged Cincinnati in any way, or other than showing a little bit of irritation with Marty Brenneman. But if the Reds do determine that he's not going to be willing to sign any kind of a deal, that he's going to want to hit that free agent market, at that point, you absolutely have to at least explore the possibility that you can make some kind of a deal that's going to improve the Reds in return. You know, there's no guarantee they're going to get that draft pick, and it's going to be Waka like the Cardinals got. You know, more likely it's going to be someone that it's a good pick. It's a, you know, first round plus pick, I guess. So you got to explore it. Jerks and Profar, I don't know. You know, that seems a little bit much, even for Homer Bailey plus. But you've got to explore it. And so you're right. I could see there being a series of moves involving Brandon Phillips and Homer Bailey that may, you know, down the line lead to the Reds being able to sign someone else, whether it's Shin-Soo Choo or someone else as well. So there are lots of moves they're going to make, and Walt Jocketty really said exactly that today, as you mentioned earlier. This is just hiring Brian Price today is just the first, and may end up being the, I guess, least of all the moves the Reds make this year in terms of what it does for the organization. It's going to be a fascinating offseason. It really is going to be as fascinating as any that I've seen, I don't know, maybe in my lifetime.
Yeah, and I think the key thing for me is that they are not giving any indication that they're giving up on 2014.
Right.
And I think that's the important point, is that, you know, people are afraid of what they're going to do. And I understand that. I mean, you know, especially if you live through the 2000s with this team, you know, you don't want to see them start trading away guys that you've grown to like and such. But on the other hand, this team, you know, the window is very shaky right now. You know, even with making these deals, there's no guarantee that they're, you know, they're going to be a an elite team. You know, the Pirates look like, you know, I expect some regression from the Pirates in 2014, but they've got enough young players that I also expect them to not, you know, they're kind of 2010 Reds right now.
Yeah, they'll still be good.
And you got to admit it, the Cardinals are stacked. Ugh. I mean, they are, and they're gonna be good for a long time. And we you just have to accept that. So, you have to, if you're Walt Jocketty, you really just have to always be kind of looking at, okay, not just this season. You know, do we want to play just for, you know, 2014 and try to only, you know, go all in? Or do we want to look at what opportunities are out there for us to also kind of be ready for 2015, 2016, 2017, beyond then? But I don't think they're going to lose focus on 2014. I think that what they're going to try to do, though, is kind of give themselves some more long-term hope.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do because they don't have much of a minor league system right now.
They don't. They've got a lot of young pitchers, which may make it a little easier to do. But I think they can thread the needle. I think there's an opportunity to not punt on 2014, still consider the window being open for 2014, but also have a little bit more of a long-term focus, which at some point they're going to have to do because, as you said, the cupboard is a little bit bare in the minor leagues. At some point they're going to have to, you know, they've signed some guys long-term, some young guys, but still at some point they're going to have to refill the coffers, so to speak.
Well, like right now, I mean, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Right now, they don't have any, well, outside of Tony Cingrani, they don't have any major league pitchers signed past 2015.
Is
that right?
Yeah, I think that is right, actually, now that I think about
it. Yeah, because Leake was first-year arbitration eligible this year, right? So, this past season. So, yeah, I mean,
Cueto will be up at that point. Latos will be up.
He's got two more seasons before free agency as well.
Under control, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's something to be, you know, to really think about because, you know, like the Beyond the Box Score did a trade proposal of the Reds acquiring David Price, who, again, only has 2 years left on his contract before he's a free agent. And while I'd love to have David Price, something like that does not make sense for the Reds.
No.
Especially because they were talking about the Reds trading Tony. I mean, it was just a bad deal all around for the Reds, trading Tony Cingrani, trading Phillips and Ryan Ludwig in the deal as well to the Yankees, and in that also giving $15 million. So basically not having any benefit to the trade,
right,
for 2014. So anyway, my point of bringing that up is that you got Robert Stevenson. You know, there may be a couple other guys down in the minors that I'm not as familiar with. But I mean, you have some guys pitching wise that may come up. But they're, you know, they don't have anybody that's on the cusp right now. Billy Hamilton's the closest they've got, and you know, let's be honest. I mean, Billy Hamilton's an exciting player, but he's not a. And these words are probably going to come back to haunt me. He's not a team changer kind of a guy.
He's a
guy that's going to come up and play a role as much as anything. And that role is going to be exciting and it's going to be very fast. But he's not a Joey Votto or a Jay Bruce, the kind of guy that you're going to anchor your team with.
No. He can help if he's used correctly, but you're right. You brought up something there that really I had not considered as much, which is that we got a lot of young pitching, but yeah, there are going to be some real decisions the Reds are going to have to make over the next couple of years as to what they're going to do with some of these young guys. And I'm worried about pitching always, whether or not to commit long term to any pitcher, frankly, given the injuries and what we've seen out of pitchers. So it's not just this offseason. Man, the next couple of years are going to be really interesting. Let me just quickly, before we leave Brandon Phillips completely, what happens if Brandon Phillips is still a Red come spring training or opening day?
What happens if he's still a Red on Reds Fest?
Oh, gosh. Go ahead.
You're right. Brandon is much of his the reason why he's become popular, other than the RBIs, has been his he's gone all out to pretend to be fan friendly. It looks like to me at this point it was pretending just in order to get that big contract. But he's done some things here lately that have not have been as as fan friendly.
He has gone after people on Twitter. That's for sure.
He's gone after people on Twitter. We both like Trent Rosecrans. That whole thing. He's shown his rear end a little bit, to put it not to put too fine a point on it. What happens? Is he going to be a problem in the clubhouse? That has a potential in my mind to really explode if they don't move him at this point, given what all has gone on. Do you see it the same way, or maybe not?
No, I agree, and I think he's kind of, because of the personality that he has, and because of really kind of who he is. The fact that it has gotten out that they're going to shop him, and I think it was actually an intentionally getting out.
Yeah.
Because I think they probably felt like, from a PR perspective, that letting it get out of the bag was only going to be good for them, because Brandon was going to show fans kind of the frustration that they've had with him. But anyway, I think the fact that it's out there and that it's in the public eye, or in the public discussion, is kind of guaranteed. And it was a bad strategic move, perhaps, but it's kind of guaranteed that they have to trade him. I don't think Brandon's a jerk. Like most big athletes, he's got an ego. Joey Votto has an ego. Jay Bruce has an ego. They all just kind of get expressed in different ways. Brandon's much more of an extrovert, so we see his ego on show a little bit more. I don't think that he was faking it with the fans. I think he really enjoys that with the fans. I think that he's perhaps there's some anger with the way things are going within the franchise, relative to him, that maybe that's kind of why he's had some of those outbursts that he's had on Twitter. I don't want to get too armchair psychology on him. Anyway, my point being, he's got that attitude, and I think he's probably also had his feelings hurt through this. I mean, why wouldn't you? You feel like you've, regardless of the stupid things that he said, if you kind of look at it from his perspective, he obviously wanted to be in Cincinnati. He campaigned basically to get a contract extension, which he would have gotten. He would have been able to get similar money on the free agent market. I mean, I think that was pretty clear. And so, he really campaigned to be in Cincinnati, and now he probably sees that it's, at least threatened to be taken away from him. And that's kind of hurt some. And that kind of hurt is not the kind of hurt that heals easily. And it's not, especially if he's still in Cincinnati, still working for the same guys next spring. He's going to feel that hurt a lot. And the problem with somebody like Phillips is that he expresses that kind of stuff. So it's going, I think it could end up becoming an issue, especially in the clubhouse.
Yeah, that's probably going a little far for me to say that he was faking it a little bit with fans. He's a guy that really, really enjoys the adoration that comes along with being, basically a walking web gem, which he's been over the last few years. And he enjoys that. And any kind of criticism hurts him a little more than it hurts anybody else. Or I don't know that it hurts him any more than it hurts anybody else, but he's willing to show that it hurts more than other – Joey Votto, for example. He's also willing to bask in the adoration a little bit when he gets an opportunity. I think probably he's going to have to be dealt. I worry about how it's going to affect the clubhouse if he's not dealt. But I don't want to criticize Brandon Phillips as much as it sounds like I'm criticizing him. There was a time when Brandon Phillips, I think this is still the case. Anything the Reds Community Fund, for example, asks him to do, he shows up. Anytime he can, and a lot of that's because he likes the fact that people love him. and which is fine. But he's been willing to go out and do what he could for the community fund and for the Reds, and he's in a lot of instances really helped put a good face on the Reds franchise. And I don't want to underestimate that. Given the fact things have turned sour a little bit, I think he probably has to be traded. But he's such a I don't know. He's such a unique individual, and I hate to see him lashing out at fans the way he does, because, frankly, I think the fans have given him a little more credit for being maybe a little better than what he actually is, thanks to the RBIs. And I don't know. It's a very complicated situation with Brandon Phillips.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't know what else we can. We've sort of beat Brandon Phillips to death. Let me, before we sort of wrap things up here, let me ask you what you think. We've talked about it, I believe, before, but Bronson Arroyo, the Reds have a big decision to make regarding Bronson Arroyo. And I wrote something a couple weeks ago or last week, I don't remember when it was, I think it was last week, that based on a quote by Arroyo where he doesn't think that the Reds are going to offer make this qualifying offer to him, which the last I heard, I don't think it's changed. It's going to be in the neighborhood of $14 million for them to make that qualifying offer. And, of course, the Reds, for those of you that don't really know, if the Reds make that offer, Arroyo turns them down, the Reds get that draft pick as compensation when he signs elsewhere. I love Bronson Arroyo. He's just, what a Red. What a career that guy's had as a Red. Much better than I thought it was going to be. But are they going to be able to make that qualifying offer?
Well, I mean, I guess it partly depends on what happens with Homer Bailey, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, if you think you might trade Homer Bailey, then yeah, you make the qualifying offer. Just today, Tim Lincecum, it was announced he signed a 2-year, $35 million deal. Now, Bronson Arroyo does not have the legacy of Tim Lincecum, but if you go back and look at their numbers from the past 2 years, I'm guessing that Arroyo's numbers look a lot better than Tim Lincecum's. So, if Lincecum can get that kind of money, granted he wasn't on free agency and, you know, he signed back with the team that he was with, maybe Bronson feels comfortable turning down a $14 million offer. And if that's the case, then yeah. I mean, you make him the qualifying offer. I don't think that a 1-year $14 million deal is as scary as some people seem to think it would be. The only real issue with bringing Arroyo back is if you don't have any place for him to pitch. And that might be the only reason I wouldn't do it, but I don't believe that he'll actually accept the qualifying offer. I think he wants the years more than the money anyway. I think he wants, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal. I think he wants like $10 million a year or 12 or whatever. But I don't think he's going to be like, well, I can't pass up $14 million for one season, because he knows that if he can get $20 million for two seasons, that's more guaranteed money. And, you know, maybe this year is the year that his arm blows out, you know?
Yeah, no, the first thing I thought when I saw that Lincecum deal was that, whoa, Bronson Arroyo's value may have just increased on the free market. Yeah. I think probably at this point, I don't think it's a no-brainer, but it's almost a no-brainer, frankly. Make him the qualifying offer. If he accepts it, you got an issue if you don't trade Homer Bailey and there's no real place in the rotation for him, because you got to think Cingrani is ready to take over a spot in the rotation. But I'm like you. I can't see any way Arroyo accepts a one-year deal, given the fact that the market, as established by Lincecum here, he's probably got a chance of getting a 2 or 3 year deal for, you know, 10, 12, who knows how many, you know, $14 million even, maybe, depending on how desperate some team is for pitching, because Arroyo had that one bad year in 2011, but the last 2 years have been really solid, and he doesn't show much sign of slowing down, and his skill set as a pitcher, I've compared him to Jamie Moyer in the past. I don't see any reason why this guy can't pitch until he's about, like, I don't know, 75 or 80 years old. And so there's probably some team that's going to be willing to pony up some cash for Bronson. I think he'll get one more 2 or 3 year deal, and it's not going to be from the Reds. So that being the case, make him the offer. Even if steps it, there's a decent chance he'll even be by a wins above replacement. He'll be even he'll earn that $14 million, depending on whether whether you got room to pitch him enough. That's my opinion on it.
Right. So I agree.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's another. And we've talked this whole podcast. We've sort of talked about all the big decisions that Walt Jocketty and the Reds have to make over the next couple of months, 3 or 4 months until we get this closer to spring training. That's another big one. I think they'll make that offer. I think Bronson will turn it down. That's my prediction.
And I think we both agree that there's no doubt they'll make the offer to Chu as well.
Oh yeah, they have to. No question.
Yeah.
Are you like me? Would you give? It's not my money, I guess, is the first thing I need to say to clarify here. But man, I'd just about give Chu whatever he asked for if I could, because I have fallen in love with Shin-Soo Chu this year. It's irrational. I've fallen in love with him beyond any capacity for rational thought. I want him to be in a Reds uniform next year, and I'm just not afraid. I'm afraid that it's probably not going to be able to happen.
My concern would be the years more than the money. I don't think I would give him 5 years. I would do four, but I'd be a little concerned about five.
But I'm a fan. I want him in the Reds lineup. I'd give him whatever he asked for. I just want Shin-Soo Chu in a Cincinnati uniform. That's exactly, in a nutshell, why I have no business being in the Reds front office.
So how about a 1-2-3 batting order of Chu, Ugla, and Votto?
Oh,
talk about your base runners. Talk about your walks. Nobody's ever going to swing the bat.
Yeah, and if you can hit Jay Bruce fourth, he'll have 200 RBIs with those guys sitting in front of him. You talk about scoring a lot of runs. Are we going back to Dan Ugla, really?
I just tried.
He had a 179 batting average, and Brandon Phillips had over 100 RBIs. Now, you tell me which one's better. Oh, gosh, my head hurts now. All right, you know, Joel, we've kind of beaten everything to death. Anything else you really feel compelled to talk about? Anything else we need to really address before we sign off here?
Is this the part where I bring up Aroldis Chapman back to the starting rotation again?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I know. But, that's made my head hurt for a long time. And if Brian Price does choose to put Aroldis back in the rotation, I will be a fully paid member of the Brian Price fan club forever and always. I don't care if he sacrificed bunts every first inning. I will be loyal to that man. I'm irrational. Okay. Joel, are you excited about 2014?
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Why don't we let the Red Sox and Cardinals play their stupid little thing that nobody cares about? And then once they get done with that, then I'll start getting excited about 2014.
Oh, man. If I had to pick two teams that I would have paid actual real United States tender to avoid, to see them not make the World Series, the two teams I would have picked would have been the Red Sox and the Cardinals. Why do we have to suffer through that?
I don't know.
What I said on Twitter was, a guy watches baseball every day for six and a half months, and then the Cardinals make the World Series, and you just got to wonder, why did I even bother wasting my time watching this stupid sport? And it's because we love these old Reds, I guess. And reasons for optimism for 2014. A lot of moves still to go, but reasons for optimism, all right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Joel, I appreciate you joining me again today. Really enjoyed this. We could spend another hour talking about all this, but we probably better sign off now. Thanks to all of you for listening. Appreciate you downloading. Tell a friend about the podcast. Let's see if we can't grow this podcast a little bit more. Subscribe via iTunes or RSS. The feeds are available there at redlegnation.com. Joel, let's do it again soon. What do you think?
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll be doing it when they're making a big move here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it. We'll look forward to that, because I'm really excited about the opportunity that Walt Jocketty has to remake and reshape this team and really be competitive in 2014. Gang, really appreciate you all listening. For Joel Luckup, this is Chad Dawson saying so long, everyone.